whole living together thing without every second being awkward. But also, his comment about classes makes me think about the second item on the list. A kernel of dread swirls in my gut, but I ignore it as I survey the offerings. I half want to tease him about the lack of cheese, but his comment from last night about meal plans tells me not to. Your teacher would be very impressed. Looks good, but I don't want to take your food. He sighs.
Josie, I'm offering.
Shit, I'm handling this badly. I meet his gaze. I can tell he's trying to navigate this whole situation. I'm trying too, but failing, so I blurt out a confession. I haven't had a roommate since college, and I'm pretty sure both of them hated me from day one. He scoffs.
Why would anyone hate you?
Because I asked them to raise their beds, I say, then quickly explain. We all had different move-in dates. They moved in the day before me into a freshman triple with three elevated beds. When I moved in, both of theirs were already lowered and their bureaus and things were spread out. When I asked them to elevate their dorm beds so we could all have enough room to put desks and stuff under our respective beds, they both refused. One told me she was afraid of ceilings. The other said there'd be no room for her things then. He sneers.
So they hated you in response to their selfishness?
Yes, I say.
That makes no sense. Also, why didn't you tell them that that was bullshit?
I flash back to my freshman year, to how uncomfortable the living situation was after that, to how selfish they were, to how I dreaded returning to my dorm room every afternoon when I was through with classes. I didn't want to make the situation worse, I admit.
I'm not like your freshman roommates.
I know, but I really don't know how to do this. I don't want to get in your way, I say, choosing patent honesty. He pauses, seeming to consider that.
I get it, and I don't want to get in your way either.
But it's your house, I say, then flap a hand toward his bare chest. Clearly, you're used to walking around half naked. He looks down at his chest like he's just realized he's not wearing a shirt. When he lifts his face, he offers me a wry smile.
Maybe I was doing it in solidarity of your half-naked attire.
By all means, then, please stage a march in support, I say. The corner of his lips twitches.
If I have to.
I insist, I say. For a hot second, his smile turns a little dangerous, but then it's like he thinks the better of it and points to the stairs, resigned.
I'll put a shirt on.
I want to tell him, please don't, but instead I let him bound up the steps. While he's gone, I pour a glass of water and do my best to think unsexy thoughts as I drink. When he returns, he's wearing a blue Sea Dog shirt. He slides the charcuterie board toward me.
Eat,
he says. Can I at least contribute an apple? I offer.
You are really determined, aren't you?
Yes, I say, lifting my chin, just like I was determined to make the best of my freshman year situation.
I promise I'm nothing like your asshole college roomies,
he says. Then wiggles a brow and shifts the broccoli, revealing a slither of red underneath.
Also, I did use your apples. Cosmic crisps are fucking elite.
Dude, I know, I say, then grab an apple slice and crunch into it. When I finish chewing, I grab another and point it at him, then gesture to the spread. Is this on your meal plan? He brings a finger to his lips.
Shh.
Scofflaw, I say in mock surprise, but he just smiles.
Actually, it is, under acceptable snacks.
So you work out, you eat clean, you watch hockey. I'm sensing a theme, I tease. His smile burns off, and his face goes stony for a minute.
I like other things besides hockey.
It's said a little defensively. I backpedal quickly with a bright, of course you do.
It's just, the job keeps me busy.
I've really put my foot in my mouth. I totally get it. Dragging a hand through his hair, he sighs.
Sorry, sore spot. You would have no way of knowing that.
I feel a little better that he said that, but I'm still somewhat unsteady. I'm sorry too, I say, then shrug helplessly. I'm not sure how to do this roomy thing.
Honestly, I feel the same. I've never lived with anyone since my freshman year either.
So we're in the same boat, I say, even though I'm mentally filing away the detail that he's never had a live-in girlfriend. Is he noting my romantic backstory too, that I haven't lived with a man? Get over yourself, of course he's not.
But we'll figure it out, okay?
He adds, okay. I say, focusing on food and navigating our first night together sharing a meal in the house. I turn to the fridge to grab some cheese slices and make a sandwich. So, baking? I ask, returning to my question from earlier today as I slice some bread.
The ice cream was an exception. I have pretty good willpower in general, so I don't mind you baking.
And staying power, I think, remembering his stamina in bed. But do you have the willpower to resist a cupcake?
Depends on how tempting it is.
He says, I shouldn't tempt him. Really, I shouldn't. But as we eat dinner, standing at the counter, two very different people, I start to think about another item on the list and wonder if he might wind up helping me with that one, too. Number 3, make a friend who's nothing like you. You learn the most from them. As we finish, he says,
by the way, whatever happened with your freshman year roommates? You made the most of it, since that's what you do, right?
I smile a little evilly. Actually, I plotted with some other friends and arranged for a room transfer. I traded with a girl who snored loudly. He whistles in admiration.
Remind me not to cross you.
We manage the roomy thing easily enough. I'm out all day at work most days and one or two nights a week as well, since we're open at night, and Wesley works most nights. When he is home in the evenings, I try to wander around local bookstores or check out museums, not to avoid him, but to be polite. I don't want to cramp his style. When we do see each other at home, I give him space and he does the same for me. But mostly I don't run into him since we're on such different schedules and he's busy with practice, workouts, and home games most of the first week. By the time the weekend rolls around, he takes off for a stretch of away games for several days. I have the place to myself after work on Sunday, so I cook and bake, including lavender chocolate chip cookies that I bring to the library, and they're gone in seconds. At night, I also read and research the city. One evening, as I'm on the bus home, checking out an online course catalog, my phone pings with a new text, this one from Everly. Everly, how's it going? Settling into the city? Living with a hockey player? Don't trip over any hockey sticks. The text sends a little zing of happiness through me. I like that she meant what she said the night I met her when she offered survival tactics. I reply right away. Josie, no tripping yet, so no 2-minute penalties either. Everly, damn, you know the sport. Impressed. Josie, it's hockey by osmosis with me, I swear. Everly, whatever it is, it worked. Do you need anything? I'm an excellent tour guide. Oh, that's tempting. I slide my teeth across my lower lip, considering. On the one hand, I want to say yes. I'm eager to make new friends. But is that greedy? I have Maeve and Fable. On the other hand, friendship isn't a thing to be stingy with. Josie, I love exploring. Also, if you have any recs for grocery stores that don't charge $8 for bread, that'd be great. I'm totally not pointing fingers at the plethora of bougie gourmet markets near where I now live. Smiley face. Everly, I got you, babe. We'll send some recs. And we'll go check out the marina or Russian Hills soon. We chat some more, then make plans to visit the marina neighborhood. It's gorgeous there in the fall, she tells me. When the bus arrives at my stop, I walk the few blocks to Wesley's place, then go into the silent home since he's not there again. These nights alone feel like ones when I was younger, when I used to babysit for the Murrays down the street. Once the kids were asleep, I'd wander through their home at night, curious about everything. The books on their shelves, the games on their coffee table, the food in their fridge. That's how I feel at Wesley's place as I check out a few party games on the table, Cards Against Humanity type stuff, as well as video games, mostly involving zombies. His record collection is extensive, and I hardly know any of the band's names, but I'm not a music person. There aren't any books, but maybe he's a digital guy. The fridge is full of nutrients. That's what he eats. Food with a purpose. I try not to be too nosy. I'm a guest, after all, so I don't open drawers I shouldn't or paw through shelves, and I don't go upstairs. Still, my cat-like curiosity keeps rearing its head every time I pass the staircase. On Thursday night, I stop and stare, my mind spinning in new directions. Is there a dungeon up there in his room? A sex swing? Would I like a sex swing? My chest warms. Maybe I would. Does he have a bed with those straps on it for tying up playmates? Now my chest tingles. I've read too many books. But even so, wouldn't that be something if he had a room full of accoutrements? He did seem like the tying her up type. A delicious chill runs through my bones at the thought. But he also seems like the bend you over the kitchen counter and fuck you hard after work type. A sharp, hot blast of pleasure rushes through me. Once again, I retreat to my room under the stairs and picture our one and only night together. But even though he's in Detroit or St. Louis or who even knows, I'm quiet as I come. I bite back my moans. I can't shake the idea that this isn't my place and that somehow someone could be listening. Or really, that he could. And that he'd know I was lying when I said I went to Frida's to give him a thank you gift. On Friday night, I'm exhausted from an energizing week at the library helping patrons. I also came up with an idea for a digital initiative to help enhance the reader's experience, and Talia gave it the go-ahead, so it's been consuming my mind. Wesley told me he's not going to be home till late, so after I clean up my dinner so the kitchen is spick and span, I am super roomy. I settle into the couch, take out my blank book and my list, then flip through the course catalog from the Community Academy, checking out class offerings, wishing I could skip number two, but knowing I can't. I need to find just the right class for the item about overcoming a fear. But it's almost 9, and a yawn overcomes me. I stretch, then head to my room, grab some jammies, and take a quick shower before bed. I rub 5 different kinds of lotions and potions into my face, starting with under eye cream, then serum, then night cream. When I look dewy as fuck, I'm satisfied. I loop my brown hair into a bun with a scrunchie, slide my glasses back on, and return to the living room, stopping when I reach it, startled. Wesley's sitting on the couch. I gulp. I had no idea he'd be home now. He said late Friday night. Is 9:30 late for him? I didn't realize you'd be here, I say, feeling caught. But why?
I live here,
he says with a sly smile. I know, I just...
Fly was early.
He's still wearing his travel clothes, and they're too sexy. I hope the league never changes its suit rule ever, since he looks so damn good in charcoal slacks and a blue dress shirt with a couple buttons undone. They show off that silver chain on his chest. I want to tug on it with my teeth. As he leans back against the couch cushions, legs spread, eyes gleaming, he holds a tumbler of something. Scotch? Whiskey? Does he even drink either of those? I don't have a clue, but he holds that glass like a man who commands a room. I'm not sure what to say next, but the air feels charged, crackling, especially when his gaze locks with mine and he says,
I see. I was number one on your list. Chapter 17. The not excuse. Wesley. Maybe I should feel terrible. After all, Josie's standing frozen in place on the other side of the coffee table, dressed in white fuzzy socks with purple polka dots on them and cute matching PJs, and her eyes are like a rabbit's. But I'm too intrigued to feel bad. I'm at the top, and I'm the only item crossed out, I continue. Then take my time swallowing a sip of scotch I poured. Seems you've got a lot left to do. This list is too fascinating to let go of. I've never met someone with a list of dreams, adventures, personal challenges. Josie isn't like anyone I know, and I'm a little hung up on the way she's chasing a certain kind of life.
I do,
she says tentatively, but then her lip curls.
You really looked at my list?
I didn't not look. Should I feel bad? I don't. This list is like a gold mine of Josie.
You're using the not excuse?
She's confused and maybe hurt. Okay, I feel a little bad now. I set down the tumbler on a coaster on the coffee table. I sat down with a drink and it was there.
It was there?
She asks it with familiar emotion etched in her features. She's embarrassed, like she was the night I met her, especially as she repeats,
"It was there?"
Well, shit. I scratch my jaw. But I don't understand why she's this upset. Why anyone would be this upset. The list isn't super personal, it's not sexual, it's an inspiration list. A bucket list. It's not bad, Josie, the list is actually kind of cool. She swallows and looks away. Slivers of moonlight stream through the window, dancing across her ivory skin as she seems to think.
It's just, it's personal,
she says softly. Lesson I just learned. Just because a list isn't sexual doesn't mean it's not private. You're right. I shouldn't have looked. She rolls her lips together, lets out a big breath, then meets my gaze, straightening her shoulders.
It's okay. I shouldn't have left it there,
she says, then shakes her head, like she's letting go of her emotions.
And it's fine. It's okay you saw it. Some of my friends know about it, like Maeve and Fable. They know bits and pieces, but I haven't shown it to them. My mom knows I've started it now, but that's all. None of them know everything that's on it. No one does.
She doesn't have to say except you for me to understand what she means. I won't tell anyone, I say.
I know,
she says, but she sounds kind of sad, and I feel fucking worse. I promise, you can trust me. You know that, right?
I do. You caught me off guard, and I don't always do well with surprises. That's all.
It's quite an honest admission. I'll be more careful, I say, genuinely contrite now over the whole thing. And yet, I'm still a little obsessed with it. For what it's worth, I think it's pretty cool, this list. I think you're brave. She scoffs, then comes around to the couch at last, bends for the paper and folds it back up along well-worn crease lines, holding it close. I feel a little chastened, perhaps rightfully so. I push to my feet. Sorry again. I'll leave you alone. A hand comes out, grabs my biceps.
It's taken me 2 years to start it,
she admits quietly. A beginning. A truce. I sit back down. Yeah? She sits too, taking her hair down and sliding the scrunchie onto her wrist. It's like she's unlocked.
My aunt gave it to me before she died. She'd been sick for a year, a really hard year.
She takes a beat, to collect her thoughts, I suspect.
But she wanted me to have fond memories of her, of us. She wanted to leave me with something, so she wrote me this list so I'd have...
She stops again, her voice breaking.
This piece of her when she was gone.
My heart lurches toward her. I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
She says, then meets my gaze, her blue eyes pools of emotions.
That's why I was so happy when you had the scarf. It's hers, and she gave it to me.
I'm glad I found it, I say, and not only for the reason I'd originally wanted it, but because it means something to her, something important. And I apologize again for looking at your list. She shakes her head.
It's okay. I would have done the same. I didn't want you to think I wrote it myself, and it always takes me a minute to say she's gone, you know?
No one I'm that close to has died, so I don't truly know. I understand, I say, since that feels true enough. Fiddling with the scrunchie, she says,
It's taken me a while to start it because...
She stops, eyes welling.
I'm not that good at getting out of my comfort zone. I'm a creature of habit.
She meets my face, shrugs a little hopelessly.
I'm not the daring girl. I'm not the bold one. I'm the girl who escapes into books.
My heart clenches for her, for the way she sees herself, for how she believes she's not adventurous. I don't buy that. You're the girl who walked half naked through the city to get back into her apartment rather than waiting till her friend came home, I remind her. She gives a small shake of her head.
But it's taken me 2 years because I research everything. I've researched all these items on the list. I've never had a one-night stand. I'd only been with one guy before you.
She quickly adds, and this intel should not delight me as much as it does, yet it's so fucking delightful.
I mean, I even looked up how to have a safe one-night stand.
Yep, called it with her being adorably old-fashioned. And everything about you makes perfect sense now. That earns me a small laugh.
I did. I read articles on what to talk about, how to discuss STDs and consent, where to have one.
Well, you nailed it. Your first one-night stand.
And you nailed me.
She says, and now I'm picturing bending her over the bed, sliding home, feeling her tighten around me, hearing her ask for what she wanted. And that is on my list of things I don't regret, I say, since we're being honest.
Me too.
She says, then pauses before she turns more serious.
With the list, though, I put it off so long, and then it was easier to start it when I moved here.
Why now? She sighs, swallows, inhales.
I missed her so much when she died. It was hard to...
She purses her lips, fighting off tears.
Move on.
My heart aches for her. I want to wrap her in my arms and kiss her hair. Maybe it's not true that you're not the bold one. Maybe you were just holding on to someone you loved. With a small smile of admission, she rubs her palms on her thighs, blowing out a breath.
I felt like she understood me better than anyone else. I guess that's why I didn't do it. Maybe also because I was getting my master's degree in school and all that.
Maybe you weren't ready. Not being ready doesn't mean you're not bold, I say.
But some of the list terrifies me. Well, not the item my O supplier checked off.
It takes me a few seconds before I realize what she's done, given me a nickname. That's what you call me?
It's true,
she says. It's seriously fucking true, I say, wishing so damn much that I could make it true again. Even though that'd be a big mistake, I force myself to think about the rest of the list. Then about walking into my home a half hour ago, pouring a scotch, sitting down to chill on the couch and play a video game, and seeing it there. Too tantalizing to look away from. The promise of new horizons, new potential, new possibilities. The list is like a blueprint for becoming your happiest self. It's a list that cries out, do me now. Several minutes ago, I was thrilled to be on it. Masculine pride and all driving me on. Now there's a new feeling taking root inside me. There's a possibility that the top 10 things I never regretted would be good for both of us. Sounds too like that's what she needs, a partner in taking chances. Excited by this possibility, I sit up straighter and jump headfirst into the waters. Can I do it with you? She flinches, taken aback.
You want to do it?
I do.
Why?
I'm already part of it, I say, and I feel connected to it. But I feel like it's what I've been missing, too. But it's also... I stop and take a deep, fueling breath, and then say something hard. You know what you said the other week about me being hockey, hockey, hockey? She winces.
Yes?
You're not wrong. I am. It's hard not to be. It's why things didn't work out with my ex, Anna. She said I didn't like anything besides hockey. Josie shakes her head adamantly.
That's not what I meant when I said that. I was impressed with your discipline, that's all.
I know, I say gently. I know you didn't mean it the same way. She wanted me to be someone I'm not. Someone who discusses theoretical issues at dinner parties. Who reads long-ass articles that go on for days. Who debates philosophical issues. Josie shudders. Exactly. I don't want to talk about some man named Immanuel Kant, I say. But it still made me think. I don't always have fun outside of my job, and I'd like to. I'd like to do something that has nothing to do with hockey. Someday my life won't be hockey, hockey, hockey.
That won't happen for a while. You're 27.
And yet, you never know. I tilt my head to the side. So what do you say? For the first time since you walked into the living room tonight, her smile spreads.
You really want to do this?
She asks, not uncertain, but like she wants to be 100% sure I'm on board. I do. Then I shrug, a little cocky, pointing to the item about making a new friend. And anyway, I'm number one and number three, so you'd regret not doing the rest of the list with me. She taps her chin playfully, seeming to consider my offer, and looks back down to the paper, her eyes landing on the third thing.
So we're friends now? The jock and the nerd?
We are. How's that for our roomy rule? She sticks out a hand and I take it. Shaking on this new friendship rule. Too bad I still want to tug her onto my lap, pull her close so she's straddling my thighs, then hold her face, run a hand down her throat. and trace the outline of those pretty lips. But there's too much at stake. This living situation, the team, and now, her. This woman who's on the cusp of something, who's changing, learning how to be a bolder version of herself. Maybe I'd like to be another version of me too. The version that isn't defined by the one thing I've been good at, the only thing I've ever been told I could do well. She takes the paper and unfolds it, then grabs a pen and hands it to me.
Well, new friend, why don't you cross off number 3?
I uncap it, then make a long strike through that item. Make a friend who's nothing like you. You learn the most from them. I set down the pen and say, time for the next one. I read number 2 out loud. Overcome a fear. Take a class you can't prepare for, baby. Psst. Improv class time. She groans.
Why does anyone take improv class?
To think on their feet better.
It sounds dreadful.
Why?
I need to be able to prepare for things, research them, prep. There is no prep in improv. Ergo, it is my personal hell.
And yet, we're doing it. We're going through hell and coming out on the other side. When is it? I smile, loving this little bit of intel I've gathered about her. I'm sure you've researched the next and best class in town.
I have, and it's Thursday night.
And why does it sound dreadful?
See the list. Overcome a fear. Your roommate has a fear of public speaking. When I teach classes at the library, I have to speak to groups of people, of course, but I can plan those out. I have materials and curriculum and information at my fingertips. But without information, I'm free-falling. I hate acting, and I am not good on my feet.
I smile, then drape an arm around her shoulders. Well, I am good at all those things, so I've got you. I might want more, but this will have to be enough. Chapter 18. A Brand New Bruise. Wesley. 2 solid weeks does not a season make, but it's a better way to start than the alternative. Still, I put our 5-2 start out of my mind when I hit the ice 2 nights later. I always put our record, the past, and other games out of my head when it's game time. Years of working on mental fitness. Thanks, Dad. No, really, I do appreciate his insistence on mental prep. Have honed me. When I'm on the ice, I'm all about the present. Like now. As I skate across the ice with a puck, racing behind the net in the 3rd period, I'm determined to break this annoying fucking tie. The arena's alive with the thunderous beat of the crowd, their cheers and roars fueling every move as I narrow in on the prize. Trouble is, this bruiser of a Seattle defenseman has been up in my grill all night. As I fight like hell to hold on to the little black disc, number 78 looms in front of me, a giant clad in red and black, blocking my path to the goal. But Asher's free. So I slip the puck to him seconds before their defender slams into me, and then I slam into the boards. God damn, that hurts. Pain shoots along the side of my abs, a sharp burn. Gritting my teeth from the impact, I crumple to the ice, tangled up with the other player for a few seconds. The crowd chants, "Fight, fight, fight." But this moment is nothing. These moments happen in every game when you crash into each other. I get to my knees and push myself back up. And a few seconds later, I'm right back in the zone next to Hugo, who's blocking. This time, Alexei, our center on the second line, passes the puck to me. I slap it right toward the goalie's open legs. But Seattle's not our toughest foe for nothing. Their big goalie blocks it. Frustrated, I skate to the bench, hopping over the boards for a line change, then grabbing some water. I'm next to Christian, who taps his stick to mine. "We'll get it next time," he says. We fucking will. After his shift, I'm back out there as the seconds tick down on the game clock. Adrenaline courses through my veins as Seattle goes on the attack fast and hard across the blue line, 2 of their guys flicking the puck back and forth, barreling toward Max at the net. But when Seattle's winger flings it toward our goalie's shoulder, aiming to send it whizzing past him, Max blocks it easily with a glove. Our defender gets the rebound, sending it to Alexei, who spins around, flying the other way. I don't want to go into overtime, I really don't. I stick by Alexei. Their big defender is all over me again, but I'm not in the mood. I'm faster, and I'm open when Alexei sends it my way. And wouldn't you know, Asher is ready. I slip it to Asher like a goddamn pickpocket. Then he's shooting it and the puck smacks against the crossbar and ricochets into the net. Yes! Fuck yes! I smack gloves with my buddy. There's 1 minute left and all we have to do is hold on. 60 seconds later, the arena is playing our victory song. Tick Tick Boom by Sage the Gemini. And I swear my shoulders loosen a little. The knot in the pit of my stomach unwinds. Then I relax a little more. Max, Asher, Hugo, and I head off the ice and into the tunnel. Dude, we should call you Poker Face. That's your new nickname, Max says to me. I tap his stick, earning the name by hiding a smile. Works for me. Poker Face, Asher repeats like he's trying it on for size. But you're the man, I say to the golden boy, since he's been having a hell of a start to the season. The dude flashes me a winning smile as Hugo seconds the praise.
I'd say stop showing us all up, but never stop, the teddy bear defenseman says.
That's the goal, Asher replies as we reach the corridor, where Everly's waiting as she usually is post-game. She's holding a tablet against her team blue blouse, and she's ready for negotiations with that professional slicked back hair. Some of her requests will be easy, others not so much. She's smiling, but she's always smiling post-game. It's her superpower, I'm sure, come rain or shine.
Asher, Wesley, she says in her upbeat tone. Will you two rock stars talk to the press tonight?
Of course, I say. Always, Asher seconds. He is not shy. The camera loves him and he loves the camera.
Hugo, I won't bug you tonight because you were a sweetheart to talk to that sports podcaster earlier in the week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy the GM was about that, she says,
and I've got a feeling she's heaping on the thanks both because she means it and as a way to needle Max.
Anytime, Hugo says.
After Everly takes a quick and likely soldiering breath, she turns to Max, amping up the wattage on her grin. It's part of their dance. They do this tango every time.
Max, are you up for it? That was a great game tonight.
As he rips off his helmet, our goalie flashes her a smile that's dripping with irony.
Aw, thanks for asking. But I have a bingo thing to get to.
It's a game, the excuses he makes to avoid the press.
I'd be happy to charter you a helicopter to make it on time after you chat with the sports network, she says with a tilt of her head. Would that help? You can talk to the media and still be at your bingo thing with minutes to spare.
He stops, seems to give it some thought, then asks,
Will there be strawberries and champagne on the helicopter? I roll my eyes right in tandem with Asher. This is a new level of theater.
If that's what it takes, she offers brightly, going toe-to-toe with the grumpy goalie.
He taps his helmet against his padded thigh.
Let me get back to you. Your generous offer does not go unnoticed.
I can tell she's biting back a fuck you, Lambert, even as she says,
Can't wait to hear.
Then, with genuine gratitude, she says to Asher and me,
And I appreciate your help, guys.
Anytime, Asher says, speaking for both of us. When we turn into the locker room, Max says,
What's it like being the nice guys?
Let me see if my agent wrote a new sponsorship deal and I'll let you know, I say dryly.
I'll check my bank account too, Asher says.
Max huffs, then trudges ahead to his stall and I go to mine. We're Christians waiting for me.
I told you we'd get it next time, he says.
You did, Winters, I say, but out of nowhere a flash of tension rushes through me. That's weird. I don't usually feel tense post-game. Usually this is when I start to unwind, but I keep the focus on the ice as I undo my skates.
And nice goal earlier, I say, since Christian scored the first point.
Thanks. How are the kiddos?
Perfect,
he says, a proud dad, then clucks his tongue. That sounds ominous.
Listen, how's everything with Jay?
It takes me a beat to align Jay with Josie, but when I do, I try not to think of her list or their aunt who passed away, or the fact that I know things about her that her brother doesn't. Besides, well, the obvious thing that's a secret between Josie and me. I don't want to misstep with him, so I'm careful forming an answer.
She's cool, I say, figuring that sounds low-key.
Yeah? Everything going okay? No problems? It's not like I'd go telling on her to her brother if we were having problems, but it's easy to tell the truth. Everything is super chill. We get along and give each other space, I say,
That's accurate-ish. No, it's not. Space is not having dinner in the kitchen, hanging out on the couch, and planning to go to an improv class together as part of her get-out-of-her-comfort-zone bucket list. Awesome, he says, offering a fist for knocking. I knock back as he adds, Really appreciate you helping out, Bryant. You're my eyes, so I don't have to worry about her. I bristle. She's a grown woman. She doesn't need a babysitter. He seems to be waiting for me to say something, but it's not like I'm going to tell him all the details of her life, like what she's eating and when she leaves and if she did her dishes this morning. It's all good. He sighs contentedly. My kiddos are good, my wife is good, and we won the game. And my little sister is fine. I guess my work here tonight is done. He stands and surveys the post-game scene, then shoots one last look my way. You still doing those post-game workouts? Yeah. I'll join you when you're done in the media room. This is when I really need a poker face, because I did not expect that response. Cool, I say evenly, and after I talk briefly to the press, I take off for the weight room. Here, I definitely don't have to fight off teammates for use of the equipment. It's only the team captain and me, moving through push-ups and bench presses, shooting the breeze about the game, the guys in the other team, and who we're playing next. When we're done, he says, If you ever need anything, Bryant, you let me know. I'll help you out like a mentor thing. Oh, shit. He did not just offer that. Please tell me he did not offer that. I feel like a liar and I haven't even touched his sister since before I knew who she was. Appreciate it, I say, since that's not really an RSVP, even though the captain definitely offered to take me under his wing. On the way back to the locker room, we pass Coach. He gives a crisp hello without cracking a smile. Good game, guys. See you at morning skate. Christian nods. I'll be there. I'll be there too, and it feels even more important now than it ever has. And I'm not sure why, but I tell him I'll see him there. After I'm showered and changed, I head home, my muscles tired as I drive. Once I'm in the garage, I walk quietly, then stop mid-step before I open the interior door to the house. This is still new, this moment. So far, I've only come home once post-game with Josie in the house. She did say she goes to bed at 9:30, so I'm quieter than usual, slipping out of my shoes, then carrying them up the steps. Don't want to wake her. She gets up way earlier than I do. The home is silent in that slightly eerie, slightly creaky nighttime kind of way. After I set my shoes down by the door, I head to the kitchen in the dark, my stomach growling. I'm dead quiet here too, and I grab an acai bowl from the fridge and berries. There's a carton of raspberries sitting next to it, with property of Wesley written on top, like it's in an office kitchen or similar. Seems she's still paying me in fruit. I can't say no. I grab the bowl and the fruit while listening to my new tunes playlist, my earbuds in as I eat, getting lost in the beats of Frank Ocean and Givian. A soft light flickers on nearby around midnight. I hit stop on the playlist and peer down the hall. The bathroom light's on, the one by her bedroom under the staircase. She's awake, and my heart stupidly speeds up. Get a grip. The woman is up to fucking pee, not see you. I admonish myself for wanting a hello or a good game or a how's it going. I try to focus on the lyrics, listening for every word when the light shifts again. And I hit stop on the music once more as she wanders into the kitchen. She's wearing a cami with her pajama shorts, and I can't stand how ridiculously hot that whole look is. Her glasses are on, but her hair is down, and my mind unhelpfully shifts to its own playlist, playing the refrain to My Morning Jacket's Librarian. And the bit about the title character taking off her glasses and letting down her hair.
Nice assist,
she says. I flinch in surprise as I take out my earbuds. She can't have just said that. Really, she can't. She's not into sports. She's definitely not into her brother's sport. You watched it, I ask, incredulous and grateful all at once that she gave me a reason not to think about her new anthem.
Maybe.
It's stretched out, a little coy. Her smile lifts.
Did I watch it, or did I watch the highlights? What do you think?
She's flirting. She's fucking flirting. And I'm not sure I can resist it. I consider her question, then roll the dice. I think you watched it, She shrugs playfully, and it's chased by a slide of her teeth along her bottom lip. A thoroughly distracting move.
I wonder,
she says, teasing me more with the possibility of her watching me play. A possibility that is lighting me up, that has electricity crackling under my skin.
By the way, do you have a new bruise from when you hit the boards?
I grin. I guessed right. She watched me play. And this excites me. Because that is not roomy behavior. That's the behavior of a girl who maybe wanted another night with me too. I pluck at my shirt as I meet her midnight gaze. You want to check? Her blue eyes flicker with heat as I up the ante. She matched me. Then she raises me, saying,
if you want to unbutton that shirt.
Briefly, I think of Christian, my impromptu workout partner, my mentor. But thoughts of him evaporate as his sister's eyes roam up and down my torso. What is with her tonight? I don't know, but I'm not about to stop whatever this is. So I unbutton the shirt, letting it fall open so she can see my bare chest. She steps closer, studying me through those glasses, checking me out for a good long time.
Yeah, you have a new bruise.
Shame, I say, then lick my lips. I know how much you hate those. She doesn't answer right away, just keeps her gaze locked on me as the air sizzles, then sparks.
So much,
she says, then yawns.
Good night, Bryant.
Good night. She leaves and I watch her till the door to her bedroom closes, wishing I could leave this kitchen, march to her room, and knock hard on that white door, then tell her everything I want to do to her. But I force myself to replay tonight, the moment on the bench, the moment in the locker room, the moment in the weight room. My team captain's not in charge of his sister. He doesn't get to make decisions about what she does or who she sees. But I'm in charge of me. And I should not do a damn thing to create a single ripple effect across the team. I finish my acai bowl, go upstairs and get in bed, counting down the clock till Thursday night.
Chapter 19. Yes and Josie. I spent my lunch break reading up some more on improv classes, the kind of prompts they might give, how to approach them, I say as I walk to the theater with Wesley a few days later on Thursday night. I'm trying, I swear, I'm trying not to trudge there, but the pit of dread in my stomach is turning into a gaping maw the closer we get to the old theater in the heart of the Mission District, where the Bay Area Banter Brigade hosts classes and shows.
Of course you did,
Wesley says, his lips curving up. We turn the corner, passing a huge graffiti mural of animals riding bikes. It looks like something Maeve would paint, and she has painted similar works of art in other sections of the city. But even that can't distract me from my dread. It's skyrocketing now that we're a block away from the gates of my personal hell. I even checked out a couple resources at the library on the history of improv, and I read some articles on the best improv teaching techniques. I continue, narrowing in on all the data I'm storing in my head. If I can keep my focus on the homework I did, I'll be fine. Just fine. Wesley chuckles under his breath. What's that for?
You. Doing research on improv.
He says, smirking now as he looks my way with more amusement than his light brown eyes should legally be allowed to hold. But this is not amusing. Improv is not funny. How else would I know what to expect in a class? He stops outside a convenience store, peddling fruits and flowers in a display out front with a sign advertising Mexican baked goods inside.
Let me guess what they'll say.
He taps his chin, then holds out a hand like he's an MC saying, take it away.
You're a team of astronauts who have just crash-landed on an uncharted planet inhabited by sentient alien beings who communicate through interpretive dance. And go.
I shudder. No, no one said anything about doing interpretive dance. We are not doing interpretive dance. Tilting his head, Wesley arches a brow.
We might be.
I frown, then stab his chest. Take it back. Take that horrid idea back right now. He grabs my hand and curls his bigger one around it.
Josie, you might have to do interpretive dance.
He lets go of my hand, then tips his forehead.
but I'll be right there with you.
Nope. I dig in. My feet are concrete. I refuse to move. I cross my arms. I'm not doing it. I am never doing interpretive dance. Greta will understand. I raise my face heavenward and say to the starlit sky, "Love you, Greta, but you know that's a hard pass, right?" I listen for her answer, hoping it'll come in the sound of a throaty-voiced laugh, then return my focus to Wesley. She said she gets it. A hard pass is a hard pass.
Did she say that, Josie?
No. I grumble, but I don't look away from him. It's October in San Francisco, so it's strangely warm out, but that's typical for this month, I've learned. And I don't mind the weather because Wesley's in a trim burgundy t-shirt that stretches across his pecs and shows off those steel arms and the ink that climbs down his fair skin. I catch snippets of his sunburst, all of his music notes, and a view of the line drawing of the dog. The notes make sense. He loves music. I want to know about the sunburst and the dog. Briefly, I picture the bruise under his shirt, too, the one I was so tempted to touch the other night in the dark of the kitchen. But that night feels like it was years ago, especially since I may never escape this moment. Greta was not wrong when she said, "Overcome a fear." I bet there's a way around it. Then it hits me like a baby grand piano crash landing on a cartoon character. How did I miss this? My specialty is digital literacy and information, so I should have thought of this sooner. We'll do an online class. Asynchronous learning. It'll be perfect. Has there ever been a better solution in the history of the world? He sighs, adding an eye roll too as he advances toward me.
Just know this, I have no choice now.
Before I realize what he's doing, Wesley hoists me up and tosses me over his shoulder in the middle of the sidewalk. As evening crowds stream by, Wesley! He doesn't let go, even as I pound my fists against his back while he carries me fireman style to the little theater. If I die of embarrassment, you'd better say nice things about me at my funeral, I grumble.
Don't threaten me with a good time,
he says, too amused. It's official. I'm dead. I am dead from improv and you, I say, and he carries me into the theater, finally putting me down at the back row. I turn around and take it in. It's a packed class. Kill me now. Welcome to Improv for Adults. The teacher strides across the front of the small theater as a welcoming smile spreads across her plum-colored lips. If I walked into her cottage, I'm sure she'd offer me tea, complete with a honey stirrer, then listen to all my heartache in front of her warm, crackling fireplace. And still, I am annoyingly terrified. My chest is tight as I settle into the hard metal chairs placed in a circle around the room. My skin is clammy. My heart beats in my ears. I wish I weren't afraid. I wish I were fearless. I wish I were bold. You might be here because someone told you you're funny, she says, and a couple of the guys in class chuckle. Dude bros. There are dude bros here. I want to find a tunnel to another universe. Or maybe you're here because you need to give presentations at work and your boss sent you to class to prep. A few men and women in businessy attire nod. She stops, then looks our way. Or possibly because you're on a date with someone and this is a fun new activity. Who would do this on a date? I'm literally sweating. I only want to sweat if I'm in bed and Wesley's fucking me so hard he's grunting and I'm begging. And that is not a helpful thought. Nope, not helpful at all. As she talks more about what to expect, I sit up straighter, smooth a hand over my jeans, draw a quiet breath. Wesley shifts closer, his shoulder brushing mine. His touch is reassuring and tingly all at once. He leans in more, moving toward my ear, his scruffy jaw touching my cheek as he whispers,
"We can go."
It's said so thoughtfully, with so much tenderness. "Yeah," I whisper back, a knot of relief untying in my chest.
"It's okay to say no, even if it's on the list,"
he says, and I sit with that permission for several seconds, seconds that soothe some of my nerves, that settle my worries. This is a make-believe class for adults. The worst that'll happen is I'll be bad at it and we'll laugh. I lean into him, my head brushing his now, my hair touching his. I'm staying. Wesley sets a big hand on my thigh and squeezes. It's distracting. And maybe that's what I need as the teacher paces across the room saying, some of you might be scared. You might feel uncomfortable. You might hate this. But try to remember this is just for fun. And it's okay to be silly. In fact, I guarantee it'll feel silly. She stops, surveys the class in the theater. And this is not a tryout for the next Taylor Tomlinson comedy troupe. She says, and I love her for citing a female comic. You don't need to be Eliza or Allie. I officially love her for all time. You're here to collaborate, not to audition, she adds, then sweeps her gaze across the whole class, not singling anyone out as she says, and it's okay to be afraid. My throat tightens with emotions as I flash back to the time I had to give a speech in my debate class in high school. I'd researched the hell out of the topic, but no amount of research could truly prepare me for the questions portion from the rest of the class. I'd been nervous for the whole week leading up to it. Would I draw a blank? Trip on my words? Would I sound foolish? That morning, I debated with myself. Was I too sick to go to school? I was fine, of course, just nervous. But then, Greta arrived, unexpected, and I answered the door as my father made coffee. She stood there, wild red hair tumbling free, her black flowery scarf tossed casually around her neck since it was always chilly in Maine. I didn't know you were coming, I said as I stood in the doorway. It's a good surprise, I hope. Definitely. She bent closer, her voice only for me as she said, I know you're nervous, but it's okay to be afraid. It's okay too if you're not perfect on stage. And even if you're not, you're going to do just fine. And you're going to tell me all about it when I see you this weekend. Then she pressed a little charm into my hand, a silver book, like the kind that goes on a necklace. Here you go, a reminder that it's okay to be afraid. You'll get through it. She was right. I did get through it. I didn't fall in love with public speaking, but I survived it, thanks to those encouraging words from her. I shake off the fond memory, but hold tight to the meaning. It's okay to be afraid. Since I suppose I do want to do better at all the things I can't prepare for, that's why I'm here, to learn, to grow, to try. I repeat that mantra till the clammy feeling fades right as the teacher claps her hands, drawing our attention back to her. Let's begin. I want all of you to stand up, grab a partner, and get into pairs, or work with a partner if you came with one. We'll start with a simple exercise to warm up. It's called Yes And. This exercise is all about embracing the ideas of your partner and building upon them, no matter how silly or absurd the suggestion may be. Curious murmurs ripple through the crowd as she explains the concept a little further. She points to a woman in khaki slacks and a white button-down, then to the man in a polo shirt next to her. Would you like to start? Sure, the woman says with some trepidation in her voice. It's okay to be afraid. I try to send that message to her. Great. Don't worry about sounding perfect. You can be absurd or silly, goofy or serious. Let's start. You're two suburban neighbors competing for the title of Yard of the Month. My brain kicks into high gear as I invent scenarios. Just try to beat my flowers, buddy. They head to the stage. The man starts off saying his garden with its gurgling fountain is better. She says her flowers grow the tallest. They keep going, layering on to the scenarios to the point where they're pretending they're splashing in the fountain with flowers, and I'm wishing for an interpretive dance when it's my turn. A little later, the teacher calls us up. It's okay to be afraid. With mischief in her smile, she steps closer to the stage, the chime of her ankle bracelet floating through the theater. You're two strangers who keep running into each other on the bustling streets of the city. Each time you meet, you start to realize there might be a deeper connection between you. Can she read my mind? That was exactly what I needed. I look to my scene partner. Wesley gives me a reassuring smile, his eyes sparkling with encouragement. I return the smile, feeling a surge of courage at his side.
I didn't see you there.
Wesley begins in a playful tone. Okay, that's a softball. Nice and simple. What's my yes and? I imagine reading the scene in a book. What would the next line be? I raise an eyebrow, playing it with some sass. Well, maybe if you watched where you were going, we wouldn't keep bumping into each other.
Then my days would be less interesting, wouldn't yours?
He asks, and it's a simple question, but it's also a lifeline, a chance for me to build on what he's asking. Or perhaps you're just following me around the city for some unknown reason. He's right here with me, offering me another easy response.
Or maybe for a known reason, like I wanted to see you.
The next words tumble out of my mouth saucily, too. You have a funny way of showing it. You could try, I don't know, saying what you want. Wesley lifts an appreciative brow, then says dryly,
Ice cream. The answer is always ice cream.
A quiet gasp escapes me as he takes us back to our first night together. Maybe you should get some now. I hear there are ice cream shops all over the city. He nods in the direction of an imaginary shop in the distance.
Like that one? Right by the hotel?
A rush of heat blasts through me. This man. He turns me on and helps me out at the same time. Sounds like a plan, I say. Then impulsively, I take his hand and lead him to the imaginary bustling city street and toward the invisible shop and hotel. The teacher claps, along with the class, then calls up the next pair. As we sit down, my heart still beating in my throat, I say, a little exhilarated, We did it.
We did,
he says. Then we watch the others till it's our turn again a little later. Once more, we head to the stage, and this time I feel a lot less afraid. You're two lovers meeting for a clandestine tryst, the teacher says, and I wait for more, but that's it. It's like she knows what we want. My face flames, but I ignore the heat in my cheeks.
You're here,
Wesley murmurs, his voice barely above a whisper, his eyes drinking in every detail of me. My face isn't the only part of me that's hot. This time, I don't pretend I'm in a story. This time, I'm just me. I couldn't stay away, I say, my voice husky with emotion. The air crackles with unspoken words and unfulfilled longing. Wesley brushes his fingers against my cheek.
I've missed you,
he confesses softly. Is this improv or a fantasy? My skin tingles everywhere. I've missed you too, I whisper. I hope this yes and never ends.
Then maybe we should make the most of this moment,
Wesley suggests, his voice filled with a mix of desire and hope. And how do you propose we do that? His gaze darkens with a hint of mischief.
You could come over,
he suggests. The implication. Dear God, the implication. My knees weaken. My bones melt. I have no yes and. I only have one thing to say. Yes, please. The class laughs, and the teacher fans her face. Well done. I had a feeling you two would be naturals with these prompts. Wesley looks away, so I can't catch his reaction. But as I return to my seat, I keep wondering, if it was that obvious to the teacher that we'd be naturals at romantic longing, will it be harder rather than easier to be friends? The answer starts to come when class ends, and as we walk out, Wesley declares,
We're taking a pic.
I feel like a superhero. No, a dragon slayer. I'm marching through the land having vanquished the foe of my fear. A victory shot, I declare. Outside the theater, he reaches for his phone, clicks on the camera, and drapes an arm around me, drawing me closer. Then he curls that big hand a little tighter around me. A rush of tingles spread down my back. From that, that's my answer. It'll be harder.
Chapter 20. Double checkmark. Wesley. She deserves a prize, and there's only one thing to get my bold librarian who faced down the beast of her fear and slayed it. An hour or so later, I hold out the door to an open book on Fillmore Street. It's close to my house, but beyond that, I can't tell anyone much about it. I don't hang here. But Josie lights up as she walks through the entrance, passing a sign for the Page Turner's Book Club.
If I'd known I was getting a book as a prize, I'd have been a little less dramatic before class.
My bad, I say dryly. I should have told you.
It's okay. I forgive you.
She beelines for the Thrillers. That's not what I'd expected. I'd have pegged her for something sweeter. I join her as she flips through a book with a dark window on the cover.
I'm into thrillers this month,
she explains before I can ask.
Since it's October, Halloween and all, next month it'll be lit fic. The month after, romance. I'm an omnivore when it comes to books.
She snaps up a paperback called The Woman in the Hotel.
What about you? Can I get you one too?
For a guy who's quick on his feet, you'd think I'd have anticipated this moment. But nope, didn't cross my mind she'd want to get me a reward gift as well. Nah, I'm good, I say, keeping my answer light and easy, hoping she doesn't ask more questions. No such luck.
I don't mind. I have the money,
she says. Ah, hell, she thinks it's a finance thing, like when I refused a rent offer.
I pay my landlord and a couple pieces of fruit a week, so I've got extra.
I'm all good, I say. And just so she doesn't try to buy me something because she would, the fruit is the evidence, I add, I prefer to read digitally. That's a lie, but it's one that must make perfect sense to a reader like her since she says,
oh, sure, I get that.
But as we head to the counter, I picture her sneak attacking me with a gift later in the form of an ebook delivered to an e-reader I don't have. I'd be a jerk if I let her do that. For now, though, I try to ignore this guilty feeling, though, as I buy her the book, then nod toward the cafe. Want a cup for surviving item number two? Or is it too late for you?
It's way past my bedtime, but I will still take that victory cup, thank you very much,
she says, lifting her chin, proud, and rightfully so. After we order and sit with our coffees, I say, you should know I wrote your eulogy during the Yard of the Month bit.
You did.
You demanded it, I say, then take a drink. She sweeps out an arm.
I want to hear it.
After the other night, when I unbuttoned my shirt for her in the kitchen, and after this evening when we flirted on stage, I don't hold back. I lean back in the chair, then, like I'm speaking before a crowd, I say, she died, flirting, with a sexy stranger.
Not a bad way to go.
Fucking the sexy stranger would be better, I say, before I can think the better of it. She blinks, her lips parting, and I love that look. Love her response even more when she says,
yes, it would be a preferable way to go.
For a moment, the air between us is charged, sparking with possibilities. Her blue eyes darken, flames flickering in them. But the flame gutters out because of those damn roomy rules. Because we're not going there, because flirting during improv is one thing, doing it in real life is another. Best to steer this ship elsewhere. What changed for you? On stage, you seemed pretty good at improv in the end, I continue. I'm curious.
I thought about my aunt. She once said, when I was heading into a debate class in high school, that it was okay to be afraid. That memory sort of boomeranged back to me tonight, like a reminder that it's okay to sit with discomfort.
I chew on that, thinking of how I'm sitting with the discomfort over her wanting to buy me a book. Good advice. I probably feel that more than I'd admit.
Discomfort or fear?
Both, if I'm being honest.
What are you afraid of?
I turn the cup, sitting with my discomfort over what I'm not telling her about myself. I can at least start with answering her honestly. Not being able to play hockey. Not being able to play it well. Life without hockey. I want a life besides it, but I also want a long life with it.
It's a paradox,
she says, nodding thoughtfully.
But that also makes sense why you're so disciplined about it, so you can play for a long time.
She pauses, tilts her head.
You're not afraid of public speaking at all, though. Is it because of media training and stuff?
I picture her list, the item we worked on tonight. The item wasn't go to improv, it was overcome a fear. She overcame one this evening. I ought to do the same. I dig down and face that fear head on, sharing parts of myself. No, I chose to be good at it from an early age because I hated it at first. Questions flicker across her blue irises. This isn't my fondest memory, but I share it anyway. In second grade, when a teacher called on me to read something out loud to the class, I hated every second of it so much. I felt really stupid because I could barely read. Her eyes widen, but she says nothing, just waits patiently for me to go on. Later, when I finally could and we had to read out loud in class, I would count the number of kids in front of me so that I could take a guess at what I'd have to read. I'd spend the whole time reading that over and over, so I wouldn't mix up the words. When it was my turn, I wasn't truly reading it. I'd have memorized it. But eventually, I had to get over my hatred of speaking in front of people, so I worked on it. Since speaking in public is easier for me than writing or reading is, I don't offer this intel to most people. Not because I'm ashamed, but because it's no one's business. But Josie's shared herself with me. She's earned this knowledge. So I finish with, I have dyslexia. Her brow knits, then her eyes flicker with interest. That's not what I'd expected to see in them. I'd figured sympathy would cross her gaze. Instead, I see genuine care and curiosity.
I had no idea, but thanks for telling me,
she says. And that's that. She doesn't ask how to fix me. She doesn't say she's sorry. She doesn't give me a look like I'm too different from her. I scratch my jaw, feeling a little unburdened, but also still uncomfortable. So I bite off the rest of the truth. Actually, I hate reading, I say. And wow, that's freeing. I don't want you to buy me a book. I can read. I learned how. I just think it's... Well, let's just say I feel about reading the way you feel about improv.
It's Satan's work?
She asks with a wry smile. It really fucking is to me. She nods thoughtfully, clearly taking the time to absorb that comparison. Then she winces.
Did the notes I left bother you?
I shake my head. Nah, your handwriting is like Comic Sans MS. It's awesome. She laughs, bright and happy.
I always knew that was the best font.
It is. That's just facts. Then I tell her something else that I've held back. I like your notes.
You do?
She sounds delighted. They're a window into you, I add.
You sure you didn't hate reading them? I can leave you voicemail messages in the future.
I appreciate the offer, but it's not necessary. Voicemail is fine, but I don't want you to stop leaving notes because you think I don't like it. I definitely didn't hate reading them. But that's only a slice of the truth. I decide to take it a step further and give her all of it. Actually, they're kind of my favorite thing to read. Her smile blooms like a sunflower. She takes another drink of her coffee. When she sets it down, she says,
Be careful what you wish for, then.
I lean back in my chair, cross my arms. Have at it, Jay. Let's see those five things you should know about me start to pile up.
Oh, it's on, Bryant. It is on.
She pauses, her eyes curious again. Then she asks,
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why is public speaking easier?
That's a good question, one I've thought about a lot. I prefer speaking to writing a whole hell of a lot. So I made the effort to be good at it. And my dad hired like a million tutors and got me all sorts of assistive technology, like text-to-speech and even this pen that scans documents and reads it to you. He got me everything.
And that helped?
At the time, it was so much work. Exhausting work learning new ways to, well, learn. But I'm grateful for how over-involved he was. He gave me the tools I needed. He had the right toolbox. It did. I like the text-to-speech more than the pen, but yeah,